How hot is it? According to weather.com, it is now 97 degrees in Manhattan. And coming up a little later this hour, we'll have more of your answers to the question, how hot is it? If you want to submit a so hot answer, just text so hot to 30644. Somebody texted in, it's so hot, I went to the river this morning and caught a fillet of fish. Debt ceiling talks, state worker talks, pro sports talks, with all the negotiating going on this summer, what strategies are working? Last week, President Obama was accused of walking out of debt ceiling talks. Here is House Majority Leader Eric Cantor employing a classic public relations strategy, speaking to reporters last week after those debt ceiling negotiations ended for the day.
He said to me, Eric, don't call my bluff. He said, I'm going to the American people with this. So again, you know, I was somewhat taken aback, you know, because look, I was compromising. I said, look, you know, I'm willing to come off my insistence that I have always said that the House is not going to support more than one vote on this. In the spirit of saying, look, you know, none of us want to bring this to the brink because it's so uncertain as to what happens after August 7th. So he shoved back and said, I'll see you tomorrow, and walked out.
He said to me, Eric, don't call my bluff, said House Majority Leader Eric Cantor, describing the president leaving debt ceiling negotiations last week. Obama's alleged walkout and Cantor's statement to the media are just two examples in the pantheon of strategies available when you want to get to yes, believe it or not, not to no. Now, several plans are in the works, and the news that the president and House Speaker John Boehner are nearing a deal has escalated the public discussion. Now Obama is accused by Senate Democrats of walking into talks after he was accused by Eric Cantor of walking out. Here is Speaker Boehner on Rush Limbaugh's radio show yesterday.
Well, Rush, there is no deal. No deal publicly, no deal privately. There is absolutely no deal.
Another way you get to yes, by saying no, no, no deal publicly, no deal privately. There is absolutely no deal, no, no, no. And President Obama, this is a little preview from the NPR show Tell Me More, the interview with Michelle Martin that's going to air this afternoon at 2.
My hope is that with that acknowledgement that we need a balanced approach, Republican leaders on Capitol Hill are going to be willing to engage in the kind of compromise that can resolve this problem.
So, joining me now to talk negotiation strategy is Alex Colvin, Associate Professor of Labor Relations and Conflict Resolution at Cornell University. Professor Colvin, welcome to WNYC.
Thanks, Brian.
What about walking out? You heard Eric Cantor accuse the president of walking out of negotiations last week. Cantor himself walked out of the Biden round of negotiations 2 weeks before that, some people may remember, kicking the talks up the ladder to Obama and Boehner. When is walking out a strategy?
Well, walking out is a strategy that can work as a signal to the other side. You want to signal your commitment to certain positions in negotiations, and I think some of that's what we're seeing going on here. I think particularly in these negotiations, it's a way of changing the dynamic a little bit. We've seen a lot of attempt to get a real kind of win-win compromising dynamic going from the Obama side. I think the GOP's effectively been playing a more of a just what we call a distributive win-lose kind of strategy. And I think this was Obama trying to change that dynamic up a little bit, reverse roles in a way.
Now, typically in what you call the distributive or a win-lose bargaining situation, there's no long-term relationship. Isn't that right? The other kind of negotiation is considered integrative or win-win bargaining when parties have a long-term relationship to preserve.
That's right. So we certainly see that if you have that long-term relationship, you're going to try and bring in more of that integrative solution-seeking potential. The question often is trying to figure out what situation you're in, because even when you're in a long-term relationship, you're still trying to decide who gets how much of the pie.
Right. But, you know, and I know that's the model, those two kinds.
Yep.
But wouldn't we say that the President of the United States is in a long-term relationship with leaders of Congress?
Well, I think that's the tricky question here. What really is the relationship, right? It could be that they're in a long-term relationship, right? Certainly the future of the country is a long-term issue. But remember, we've got an election in 2012, and depending on who wins that election, we may not be in a long-term relationship there.
You have an orange analogy. How is an orange like a negotiation?
Well, the classic example is, there's two sisters doing some cooking in a kitchen. They've got one orange. They're fighting over who gets the orange. And in negotiation classes, we teach how the solution sometimes turns out to be that one sister needs the peel of the orange and one needs the juice so they can actually share the orange. And if they fight all the time, they don't realize that, in fact, they can share the orange. So one of the tricks in negotiations to learn is trying to find that way of dividing the orange up so that you both get what you want. Now, that assumes that you can actually find a way to divide the orange that way. If you really just want the whole orange for yourself, it's not going to work.
In the debt ceiling negotiations, which side has more power right now in their position, in your opinion? I mean, what's emerging now is that there are multiple sides in the last few days with the Gang of Six and certain House Republicans against other House Republicans, and now the Senate Democrats are angry at Obama for being willing to do a short-term deal with no revenue, new taxes. But on the basic two sides of, let's say, the Democrat, President Obama and the House Republicans, which side has more power?
Up to this point, it's looked like the House Republicans have had more power because they've got something that in negotiation theory we call a BATNA, a best alternative to a negotiated agreement. They've been willing to let the debt ceiling expire. And that willingness to do something other than compromise has given them power in the negotiations. If you've got a strong BATNA, a strong alternative to reaching a compromise agreement that you're willing to go through with, that gives you bargaining power. It's not been obvious what the administration's BATNA is. What's their alternative, right? They ultimately want to get a compromise deal. Now, more recently, it could be the case that perhaps the political pressures are building up, that Obama can look like the hero if he gets a compromise deal, and so maybe that gives him sort of a political BATNA out of this. Conversely, though, if the other side doesn't want to give him that victory, that may create problems in reaching a final deal.
And as it comes closer, this August 2nd debt ceiling deadline, when people say calamity would strike the financial markets if they don't have a deal, which side benefits more from the looming deadline as it looms closer and closer?
I think it depends on whether the GOP is serious about their BATNA. If they're willing to let the debt ceiling expire and let, you know, what some people are arguing is a calamity happen, if they're willing to let that happen, they retain that bargaining power. If, however, that BATNA has been a little bit of smoke and mirrors, and let's say the leadership gets pressure from Wall Street that they've got to make some compromise to avoid the economic consequences, that could undermine their BATNA, their alternative. They're not really going to go through with it, and then that loses their bargaining power.
So do you have a prediction based on your knowledge of negotiations as to how this is going to end?
I think it's likely to go right up to the wire, and that's something we see in a lot of negotiations, in labor management negotiations. You often have to get right up to that point where you're about to have a strike before you actually reach a deal. And I think this has got some similar dynamics, that it's this threat that the GOP House can hold over Obama of not increasing the debt ceiling that gives them the power. And so that pushes us right up to the deadline. And so we get to that point. And the danger is sometimes in negotiations, mistakes are made and you don't reach a deal. So it's a dangerous situation.
Alex Colvin, my guest, Associate Professor of Labor Relations and Conflict Resolution at Cornell University. He's an expert on negotiation in this summer of the negotiation. And you mentioned labor talks as a model. So let's actually switch over into the labor arena. Yesterday, NFL owners ratified a 10-year labor deal, although professional football players did not act because they say they hadn't seen the final proposal. At the beginning of the week, a deal looked all but certain, but now that the deal is close, the owners appear to be rushing the players, or at least the union claims, using the impending season as leverage. Is that what you see going on? And if so, how is that different from what we're witnessing with Congress?
I think there is some element of that going on, that this is a pretty common strategy. If you've got the leverage of this impending impact on the season, and you're the owners, it makes sense to do what they're doing. And we often see this kind of dynamic going on. You add in a couple of extra factors. You've got to get the approval of the individual players. That's a classic situation, labor management negotiations. Unions are pretty democratic institutions. You got to get the votes of the union members to get approval. And you may have the lead negotiator for the union, who in this case is a new union leader, making commitments at the negotiating table. And you're never quite sure if the members are actually going to back that. It's a little easier for the owners, right? There's a smaller group of them. They can make the decisions themselves. But with a membership of a labor union, you got to get the membership support. And for a new leader, that can be tricky.
Apparently, a pivotal moment that broke a thaw or created a thaw in the talks was when NFL Commissioner Roger Goodell called the NFL Players Association Director, DeMaurice Smith, and suggested a new round of talks with no lawyers present. Would entering negotiations without your lawyer be a difficult step to take, in your opinion, or is that just an act of public relations, or is it really, you know, you think in negotiations everything is calculated. Is there anything like a genuine act of goodwill? And would saying, hey, let's get together, just you and me without our lawyers, be one of those things?
There can actually be a genuine step towards reaching a good deal. Oftentimes, you do the initial stages of the negotiation with all your lawyers, accountants, your full team there. But to make the final compromises and deals, it often helps to have the lead negotiators going one-on-one, discussing things, putting things on the table, sounding out different possibilities and options for a compromise. So that's actually often a good sign when you get the two lead negotiators just one-on-one negotiating. Now, certainly once you take the lawyers out, you have to be able to handle all those details yourself. You can't fall back on anybody else, and it's important that the lead negotiators are competent in negotiating a good deal.
Peter Colvin from Cornell on the summer of negotiation. One more example, and really a contrast, at the level of state government, which, of course, has been hugely in the news this whole year, with, you know, renegotiating pension agreements with state workers and stuff like that. Ballots happen to go out today to members of the CSEA, which is New York State's largest public sector union, to ratify agreements reached with Governor Cuomo that include a three-year wage freeze and did not include as much of the acrimony as we've seen in other states. By contrast, New Jersey Governor Christie took an aggressive stance, and it seemed to pay off for him and what he got from the unions, but he didn't really negotiate at all. He went through the legislature to change worker contracts. Would you say that Cuomo and Christie were equally successful and that a softer approach can work as well as a harder approach? Or do you think the two situations were different and, you know, demanded that each governor do what they did?
I think the situations are a little different in the sense that each governor has different political interests, different kind of long-term interests that they're trying to get out of their relationship with their labor unions. Cuomo's in a situation, he's a Democratic governor. This is a potential interest group that's going to be supporting him in the future, so he needs to maintain a better relationship with them, and so he needed to do more of setting the stage through the negotiations with them to get what he wanted in terms of the budget, but then also maintain the relationship. I think Christie is in a different situation where he's not viewing the unions as a potential supportive interest group, so he doesn't need to cultivate the relationship in the same way. Now, that said, for both of them, there's a question of how well this immediate deal is going to play out in the long term. Labor management is usually a long-term ongoing relationship, and it could be that either of them could find that things don't work out as well as they might seem to initially.
Alex Colvin, I think I called you Peter a minute ago.
Right.
Alex Colvin, Associate Professor of Labor Relations and Conflict Resolution at Cornell University, looking at all different kinds of things in this summer of negotiation, which seems to be all around us. Thank you so much. That was really informative.
You're welcome.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. And we conclude for our last minutes today with your answers to the question, how hot is it? We've been taking your texts. Now we can take your phone calls, 212-433-WNYC. And we would love to get some calls, by the way, from people outside the New York City area. If you're listening, you know, in the heat belt where it's been unbelievably oppressive in some places in the Midwest, call us up, 212-433-WNYC. If you're listening in Phoenix, where I think it's actually a little cooler than it is in the New York City metro today. What the heck? Call us up. Anywhere else to call from and tell us how hot is it? New York, New Jersey, Connecticut. Give us a phone call, folks. I see that it's triple digits in Newark again. How hot is it? 212-433-9692. Somebody texted, it's so hot that I can use my hot glue gun without plugging it in. How hot is it where you are?